everyone. Welcome back to another episode of Persuasion by the Pint. I'm Jonathan Taylor, along with
Sean McCool.
Today, we're going to be talking about PR and creating a winning PR strategy. We've got our guest today is the author of Public Relations for Dummies.
It's a pretty good, pretty well-known book.
Yeah, absolutely. I did not realize you said some contributors there with one of our previous guests.
Bob that was pretty cool. I was doing a little research, and I said, wait, Bob Bly and Elise Benham are also on that book cover. And I know both those people from AWI World, and we've had Bob Bly on several times. So kind of cool, kind of all coming together.
Yes. So we have, in fact, I think our guest is in the green room. So we're going to invite him on. I think we have Eric. I believe I'm pronouncing this correct. Yaverbaum.
All right. Well, let's welcome him to the show.
Eric, welcome to the show today. Can you hear us? Is he on mute?
No.
Eric, can you hear us?
Nate?
Yeah, can you hear us?
Can you hear me?
Yeah, now we hear you.
No. Yeah. Can you hear us? There. Now you should be able to.
Test 1, 2.
How do I not have volume in here? I don't hear you guys.
We can hear you.
Let's check.
It could be on your StreamYard.
Test.
I go to your cam mic settings now.
You guys hear me?
Yes, we can hear you.
Oh. You hear me? I don't hear you. I don't know why. Let's try this. No.
Do you see the cam?
Yeah, got it. Oh, oops, got it.
Now I hear me.
Yeah. We're good. All right. You guys want a 60-year-old, you know, PR guru. This is what you get.
Yeah.
No, we love it. Hey, we have technical glitches all the time, so we just keep going.
All right, amen.
So, Eric, tell us. I introduce you as is it Yaverbaum?
Yaverbaum.
Yaver.
I like it. Yaverbaum.
It's all right. Only my mother knows. But she did watch the last podcast I was on. She was very disappointed. So no pressure.
Oh, okay.
Oh, wow. Well,
we will try to impress for sure. So, Eric, just for our listeners, I'm going to give our listeners, I gave them a little snippet there, but Eric is the CEO of Erico Communications, a communications media and public relations expert with over 40 years in the industry, having co-founded Jericho Communications and served as a president from 1985 until its successful sale in 2006. So hopefully, Eric, you'll give us some background. I know you've worked with a wide range of huge companies out there, including Sony, IKEA, Domino's, several others. As we mentioned earlier, you're the author of the PR for Dummies book. And you got quite the history there. I was looking at some of the some of the things that you were instrumental in, including the Major League Baseball strike back in '85.
That was the first time that I realized the power of the press.
Yeah.
Okay. 24 years old ending a Major League Baseball strike. I said, I must be on to something here.
That's right. Well, obviously, there's some lessons that we can take away from that. So we're really pleased to have you on the show and glad you could join us today.
Thank you so much for having me. Apologies about the sound, the lighting, all the 60-year-old stuff that comes along with it. In spite of that, we run a successful shop here.
That's right. Well, you can get some applause anyway, even though you couldn't figure out your mic there.
And are you in New York? Is that the New York City skyline behind you?
I am in New York. Actually, I don't know whether you can see it because I literally get, as the sun starts to go down on this side of my office, the Empire State Building. I have no idea if you can see it back there.
I did see it when the light shifted a little bit. That was pretty cool.
It's real.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Very nice. It's not a Zoom background, huh?
Not a Zoom background.
That looks pretty real to us. Nice location.
Yeah, well, Eric, we were saying before you came on, before you had your audio on, we were saying on PR for Dummies, We had Bob Bly on previously.
Bob. I love Bob. I've done a lot of work with Bob.
He's been on the show a couple times, and saw he was a co-author. I was like, oh, that's cool.
He gifted a writer. I can't write to save my life, although I'm a quote unquote best-selling author.
Hey, I think it was who Robert Kiyosaki said, you know, there's best-selling authors and there's best-writing authors.
Yes, I am definitely not a best-writing author. Absolutely. Yeah. I could barely pass English in college.
Oh, love it. I flunked out as an English lit major, so. Oh, well. Good to hear.
I think we've had Bob on a couple of times, and I think he's up to over 100 books now. I mean, he's written so many.
I want to name drop and say, I'm writing my seventh now, but Bob's written about 100.
That's all right.
Obviously, one of us can write better than the other one.
That's right.
Or at least faster.
Bob said, I love Bob Bly. We're very good friends, and I was lucky to have him on that book with me.
Yeah, well, we're glad to have you on the show and excited to talk about this and kind of hear some war stories maybe. And
I got a few.
Going back. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
When in the middle of your career you worked in a White House, you got stories on both ends.
Man, I tell you, you got that. I saw a little blurb on your website about being instrumental in IKEA. So that's kind of a cool story. So
yeah,
we launched IKEA in the United States. We launched H&M in the United States. I started my first agency in my 20s, which I sold almost 20 years later, almost exactly 20 years later. Went to work for Wall Street, found out what it was like being in the middle of, that was the holding company that bought us. Didn't love that. Left, and I worked on the transition team between Bush and Obama. Didn't love that a lot. Stuck around for Obama's first year, and that was when I was starting the agency that I'm running now, which I love. Finally grew up to do something I love. And let me tell you something. If you love what you do for a living, it is not work at all.
Never work a day, right?
Honestly, I feel like my entire career is a hashtag now, but it's true.
Yeah. For sure.
So at an early age, in your 20s, you're starting a PR company. Give us a little background there.
While I was in college, I just wanted a job that would pay me. The Baltimore Orioles offered me an internship, which I needed to be paid. I met a guy named Matthew Lesko. This is back in, I think, 1980. He's
like the free money guy?
Yeah, the free money guy.
Yeah. Question marks all over, yeah.
I said, I'm looking for an internship that pays. Do you know anybody? And I was so starstruck when I met him. He was a quote-unquote author. I couldn't believe I was being an author in real life. Matthew called me the next day and said, hey, I'll give you $100 a week to promote my first book. Mm-hmm. And I said, I had no idea how to do that. He said, neither do I. We'll learn about it together. And everything about my career was very much defined in that relationship as a 20-year-old.
Sure.
Matthew and I went out. We took a book called Getting Yours, The Complete Guide to Government Domestic Assistance, a literal cut and paste of a federal document. We made it a New York Times bestseller. And as a kid, I would go into the publishing houses, all of whom I still work with. All of my clients write books. They're famous, but I don't know. I got that going for me now, 40 years later. But I didn't know, when I would go in the publishing house, everybody would say, the kid, he doesn't know what he's talking about. He has an idea. I didn't. And Matthew and I would sit in a room and read articles about me, things that I didn't place that actually happened. They were profile pieces on me when I was a kid. And they would talk about, Matthew would say, they talk about what an out-of-the-box thinker you are. And he'd look at me and say, you have no idea where the box is, do you? I said, no, I have no idea. And that, that was the blessing and the curse of PR for Dummies, which was my third or fourth book that I wrote. When I wrote that book, it became almost biblical in my own industry. It's still required reading to this day in 53 universities across the country, which basically means the box that I made up because I didn't know there was one became, the cornerstones of an entire industry that I'm in. So somehow every single day, and I do feel like I've done that more so in the last decade, I have to reinvent what my own industry is every single solitary day. And if I'm not one step ahead of everybody else, I'm just in New York City, out the window, probably 1,000 PR people as far as they, you know, I can see. What differentiates one from the other?
Absolutely.
It's living in tomorrow, not in yesterday.
Right. Yeah, I can imagine. I mean, you've seen so many changes.
Yeah.
You know, with technology, social media, just over the last 20 to 30 years, it's incredible how, you know, technology has pretty much changed your industry as a whole.
Oh, completely. And those who resist it do it at their own peril. You know, when I left, when I sold to Wall Street, I thought, oh, yay, you know, now life is perfect. I got a lot of money now. I sold my agency. That was the goal. And I was miserable inside of Wall Street. But Wall Street taught me all these disciplines that I didn't have in a previous life. And one of them was writing a business plan. Mm-hmm. And the business plan that I wrote for the agency that I was running that went from hundreds to thousands of people, which was also way over what I had done, you know, in my previous life, was all predicated on the proliferation of digital and social media. I knew that was happening. I knew it was coming. The whole business plan, that's what it was about. And my board of directors, I call it a jury of my peers. And I say a jury of my peers because it was people my age. They said, nah, that's not happening. I mean, I literally said in that present, someone's going to get elected president on Twitter. You know, someone's going to get their emails hacked. Everything, the entire landscape is changing underneath us. We need to change before it does. And when they said, nah, that's not happening, that's when I left.
Yeah.
And I did, you know, I did a gig at the White House for about a year. And at the same time, I also invested in and was widely credited as the publisher of four social media magazines. Mm-hmm. There wasn't any. I did a magazine on Facebook. I did one on LinkedIn. I did one on Google. What am I skipping? And Twitter.
Yeah.
And those magazines in very short period of time had 14 million subscribers. The ad rates were ridiculous. We made a fortune. I flipped those magazines in 2 years. And that was all on a philosophy that my own board said, nah, too. And meanwhile, you know, politics aside, somebody did get elected president of the United States on Twitter. And mm-hmm. Twitter did change the way a news cycle works.
Absolutely.
And that's not, you know, now in retrospect, yeah, of course. Well, that's in retrospect. Before the fact, nobody was buying into that. At least nobody my age was.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. And, yeah, there's still people that don't understand. You know, and I think even, you know, us not being on your side of it and kind of seeing, tracking the numbers probably a little more closely, like we conceptually get it, but I don't think people really get the power of these different media. They're so big and so far reaching. It's hard to wrap your head around.
Well, no, what's concerning, look, I play in all of them. I use social media. I use social media. I don't let social media use me. I'm not mm-hmm. happy 24/7 like everybody else is in social media. Nobody
yeah.
is.
Yeah.
You know, that's a complete illusion. That said, there is ways to proactively and successfully use social mediums so that you're not being used by them. The thing is about social media, everything that we do digitally, it's, you know, digital fingerprints all over the place. And now you have artificial intelligence. So when you Facebook as an example, you go on Facebook. In the old days, you came to a fork in the road. What I said about the fork in the road was take it. Go right, go left. You decide based on all the available information to you. Now the internet will tell you, they already know, artificial intelligence, which way you're predisposed to going. So that thought process at the fork in the road, you don't have to, there's no thought process because the internet takes us in the direction we're already predisposed to going, as opposed to us thinking about it before mm-hmm. we go right or we go left. And, you know, that part's a pity. The part about misinformation and, you know, quote unquote fake news, whatever you want to call it, is you can wear shoes. You know, token liberal Democrat on Fox for a decade. I thought when I went on that network for 10 years, 3 hours a week, 10 years, that we had great intellectual friction. I know the viewers didn't love me. That was crystal clear. But I did feel, you know, this is a really great opportunity for someone who has a different point of view, and they gifted me or gave me or liked me enough to have me on regularly. I thought that was really, you know, beneficial.
Yeah.
I also think in making decisions today, you know, one, don't make all your decisions based on Facebook or Twitter or Instagram or any of them. you need to have a plethora of information sources before you make a decision so that you can make the best decision possible. And then you factor in your life. You know, I'm 60. In my life, I have 60 years under my belt of decision-making. And part of that does impact the way that I'll make a decision today. But right. part of it also, you know, it depends on what information I consume. And I try to get all sides of the story best I possibly can. But this isn't actually, everybody talks about the phenomenon of this as if it's new. And the irony of it is, when I was a kid, there's a guy named Danny Schechter. Danny was a producer at 2020. And when I was younger, 2020 was direct competitor to 60 Minutes. They were the two shows that if you want to be a big deal, you got on one of them. They were neck and neck competitors. Yeah. And Danny quit 2020. The big shot producer, I said, are you crazy? Who quits 2020? And he wrote a book. The title of the book was, and this is 40 years ago, The More You Watch, The Less You Know. He wrote that 40 years ago. So, you know, information dissemination being distorted and manipulated, that's not new. The speed and the velocity at which it is, that's new.
Yeah.
And the volume and the always-onness, I guess, of it.
Yeah, 24/7, completely. I mean, it's... Never stops.
I mean, think about this. And this is where a lot of my philosophies came to. I'm a news junkie, which is a really hard gig to have right now because you turn off the news if you want to be in your own mental well-being. What I have always had, I still have it now, and I don't know how much technology you can see on my desk. I got a lot of technology. I'm monitoring a lot of different sources of news. Yeah. I always have. I'm sitting in my office. When I started the agency, this agency that I'm running now, I'm sitting in my office. I got six screens, which you can't see back there, six different networks. I'm watching them all, just like I am today, with a bunch of screens, all Twitter, Facebook. I got a little bit of everything. And I see on Twitter, everybody standing out on the wing of Captain Sully's plane. I'm like, wow, what is 7 minutes and 32 seconds later, CNN has it. 7 minutes and 32 seconds later, Twitter had it first because somebody going by in another boat takes a picture of everybody on the wing. It's all over the damn place by the time it gets on, you know, national news. That's when I knew that that's going to be the mast that lights a news cycle. And that was long before I think it was, you know, readily acceptable.
Right.
Yeah, because when was that?
That was like 20.
That was pre-Trump.
Yeah. It was
so
2010, 2009, 2009, something like that.
So how do we, you know, as going back to PR, Eric, how do people stand out with all the noise? I mean, that's what you do, right? You help people stand out amidst the noise.
I mean, it's quizzical to me. I don't give away too many secrets or I can't make a living anymore. I mean, people that my agency, literally, we practice what we preach. So when I pontificate about exposure, and it's not just, I am on, you know, regular old television. I am still in, you know, print newspapers. Mm-hmm. I would much rather, I prefer, if I'm in a print article that doesn't get is not digital, it doesn't get as much spin around. But I'll tell you what, if I'm in the New York Times, it bounces all over the internet just like it used to. The intersection between what's regarded brick and mortar media, old media, and new media, that's where the magic is to me. And I've been playing there for the last, I don't know, over a decade, and it works. Old media still matters. Fact-checking actually still matters, although there's very little of it. And how you get yourself out there and the degree to which you do can really impact, you know, a business, a bottom line. I mean, it ripples for us all the time. I never walk into a room, I never did, without everybody, you've already read about me by the time I walk in the room. I must be important. I was in the whatever paper. I was in the Chicago Tribune yesterday. I must know what he's talking about. Anybody who uses social media or real media or everything in between, you know, the halo effect is magnificent. I feel very, very fortunate to, at this stage of my career, to be able to pick and choose the businesses that we work on in every vertical category that we're in. And part of that is because I've been in the news for so long, and the credibility that comes along with that is far greater than it should be. And it's great for my mom. That's great.
Sure.
But I also have, titans of industry who feel exactly the same because they see, the press will seek my opinion on the story of the day every day. I mean, if I wanted to, I could just do interviews all week long, every week. I would rather run my agency. But we do spend time doing, stuff like this matters a lot. Like this podcast, Matt, someone's going to watch this podcast and say, oh, I saw you on that podcast. It was so interesting. I have no idea whether it's interesting or not. I try to make it interesting, sure. And I try to tell a good story and, get people to listen.
Yeah, it's interesting. You think the old media, you said, kind of finding that mesh point between the old and the new, that old media still has the branding power.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
The Forbes, the New York Times, all those.
Well,
all those
it does. Things. It also comes with baggage, I mean, I did a round of press in Chicago yesterday. I'm used to it. I was to keep in mind. Token liberal Democrat on Fox, so I'm used to a little heat. Yesterday was just fascinating to me how the topic on, I did a radio show for an hour yesterday, mm-hmm. Was vaccines and woof, sheesh, as my son would say. Well, okay.
Well, you like to jump right in it, don't you?
All I said, I had COVID, I had it twice. I was like poster child for COVID, 2 years ago. And I don't want to get it again. I'm getting vaccine. Do what you want. Yep. Totally your call. If all this masking and vaccine, I don't know what works and what doesn't work. I just know for me personally, I would like to not have the potential to ever go through what I went through again. So I'm going to get vaccinated. You can do whatever you want to do with your body completely. That is a scandalous, controversial opinion, apparently, if you would listen to all the callers yesterday. So it's a very different, world that we live in. There's a lot of, it's not productive friction.
I think
I do think intellectual friction is very, very important. I think when two smart people get in a room and they have a debate, better, if you're open-minded, you can, all sorts of things come out of that room that are better than the two smart people and the two IQs had coming into the room when you multiply them together. But, look, in this country, at least, it seems like we're sorely lacking in the ability to do that anymore.
Right. Yeah, it feels like, in today's environment, it's getting more difficult to walk the line for any company out there, if they're trying to advertise, to walk the line in the middle,
that's because
we're like a 50-50 country now. So you got to be either this side or the other.
But that's the thing is you don't.
Yeah.
I know everybody thinks that, but I endorsed and helped and was I walked away from politics, which I was involved in. If you wanted to run for president, hire me. You definitely lose. but I was very involved in politics for most of my career. I mean, I started my first agency. I was on Capitol Hill in D.C.
Yeah.
And I worked on Kerry's campaign. I worked on Gore's campaign. Hence, hire me, you lose. And I worked in the White House. There was always friction. There was always, different points of view.
Yeah.
But I also, I just walked away from it all. I love doing this. It's fun for me. What I do now, it's great. I go to Super Bowls and do brain training and create, publicly held companies that go to the moon from scratch. It's so much fun. It beats, D.C. and politics by a lot.
Absolutely.
But I was involved in Eric Adams' campaign. Eric Adams is new mayor in New York City, mm-hmm. and which is ironically what I was talking about in Chicago yesterday. He is a quote unquote Democrat, mm-hmm. But he's more of a centrist.
Yeah.
And I would say that there's a guy. He's ex NYPD who looked at the city that I live in and said, "Huh, you know what? We're not safe. We're not even talking about COVID. We're just talking about crime as an issue.
Yeah.
We need to clean that up." And I live here. I don't care if I'm a Republican or a Democrat. I want to walk down the block and not have to witness a crime right. every single solitary night, which I do. I'm sick of that. I want someone who will fix that problem. I don't care if it was a Republican or a Democrat. And, you know, that was the issue that he, you know, that was the issue of the mayor race here. The mayor of New York City, you know, it's kind of a high profile position in the country. And, you know, we'll see how he does, but he's a very, very articulate spokesperson. I hope he's a great politician. And, you know, politics didn't matter. He won by a lot.
Sure.
So, Eric, you were going to say earlier, or maybe you weren't going to give the secret away, but I'm going to ask anyway. But you said you don't actually have to take the middle.
Yeah.
So, I'm not offended by other people's perspectives. If I'm not the dumbest one in the room my whole life, I am in the wrong room. Yeah. I love being in a room. I don't know that that's a popular opinion. And I'm not saying that to be self-deprecating. I'm just frequently not the smartest one in the room. Mm-hmm. And I'm very interested. I wake up curious. I don't know. Life's so much more interesting that way. Yeah. Waking up curious with an open mind and hearing other points of view, to me, is what makes the world a better place. So, you know, yeah, hey, I self-professed liberal Democrat, but that has nothing to do with my overall life. Inner peace, that's the goal. It should be the goal for everybody. It's just a better run. There's 86,400 seconds in every day. Mm-hmm. We all get the same exact seconds. Why don't we all take complete advantage of all of those seconds? Because we can. Doesn't matter whether you have money, don't have money. We're all going to the same place in the end anyway. Absolutely. Why don't we do it peacefully?
Can you share some of some of your most proud, I guess, I'm sure you got several, but I'm interested in the whole, maybe some case studies, like your work with IKEA.
I got an encyclopedia of things I'm proud of. My mom has two. IKEA.
Because they were kind of known as, at one time, you know, they were kind of on the fringes of the consumer consciousness, most people didn't think of them. And then now, you know, a lot of people are very familiar with IKEA. You know?
Well, yeah, they were one of my first national accounts, and Domino's Pizza was far, more known than IKEA. I would say, yeah, I represent IKEA, and people would say, oh, what? IKEA, we were very, very proud of that work. What we were most involved in initially was their openings. Mm-hmm. Their openings became the lines, the campouts, for 5 days before, just so you'd be first in line and get a chair. And the fact that that became a part of pop culture for a very long time, and that IKEA, when they came to this country, you never heard of them when they came to this country, and they became, mm-hmm. you know, what they are now. We don't represent them anymore. I have no idea where they would stand in the, you know, how many people are as aware, but I think a lot more. I mean, they were nothing when we started with them. Same with H&M, nothing. You know, vitamin water. Vitamin water was me and Darius Bickoff delivering. This is the guy who started. He's a billionaire now.
Oh, yeah.
Delivering, you know, in his beat-up Datsun. It had a trunk that wouldn't close. We had a bungee cord to hold the trunk down with the vitamin water, our whole big supply. And we would go or drive around all the markets in New York City and just to try to get some distribution because we couldn't get it. I mean, you know, Coca-Cola bought them, another billionaire. Like right. stuff like that, to me, to be able to, the mystery of how do you take a concept and turn it into a viable, not only viable, but really successful businesses and brands. I love that. I've been doing it my entire career, and there's never a year where we don't put something, you know, on the map that you didn't know about when the year started. Somehow we're always involved. We're right in the middle of pop culture. We just helped to open up One Vanderbilt. There's a space in which, by the way, for everybody watching this, if not from New York, you got to come. I'm biased, but you got to come.
Yeah.
It's called Summit. It's on the 92nd, 93rd, and 94th floor. It's an immersive art exhibit that Kenzo Digital did. It will blow your mind, this space. 92nd floor of a building that was finished. But by the way, the building is beautiful. It's right next to Grand Central. It's impossible to miss. And even if you can miss it, or you don't go through Grand Central or anywhere near it, just look at the New York City skyline. It's part of it, just like the Empire State Building. We're also very good friends of mine, so I homage to the Empire State Building. That building was an inflection point in a pandemic in New York City, a tipping point. They finished construction in the last year of construction was the first year of the pandemic. Unheard of. Was it supposed to be impossible? Not only was it not impossible, it made a whole damn city feel great, made us feel hopeful. And to me, of everything I've done in my career, hope's the biggest, like, I'm big on hope. I think that there was a congressional testimony that Mr. Rogers gave in 69, nobody knew what PBS was, let alone Mr. Rogers. And they said, he was told that in times of trouble, look for the helpers. If you see the helpers, you'll know there's help. That's what all people need. They just need some hope. If you have hope, anything is possible.
Oh, yeah.
And to have the esteem honor of being involved with that iconic building that is now part of a history book that my grandchildren will read someday as a tipping point in a pandemic, which wasn't just packaging, it was real. Seeing that in advance, we just finished that just a few months ago.
Wow.
So Eric, do you have some principles that you know, who was it? The investor that wrote Ray Dalio that wrote Principles. Do you have some principles like that you've?
No, I have no principles. By? How could I be successful if I had principles?
I knew we'd get to the truth eventually.
No, I do believe in, you know, I've read many things that Ray has written. I do believe that now, in the times that we live in, which are very troubling, certainly in so many different ways, that leadership, and that was my biggest book, was Leadership: Secrets of the World's Most Successful CEOs. I was searching for the holy grail of what made a great leader, and I couldn't find one thing that was in common. It's 100 chapters of 100 really famous, powerful people in that book. As established by me, but you've heard of most of them. Mm-hmm. I was looking for the common denominator, what made people successful as leaders, because I wanted to learn from that. I was a lifer in YPO. I was the chapter chairman in New York City. Again, looking for the ever elusive, what is the formula to move a needle and people? How do you do that? There isn't a formula. But what I did find is a common denominator. I wouldn't say with 100% of them, but it's certainly important today, is be yourself. You be you. I'm going to be me. If we do that, it's a much easier conversation. We're not, no BS. Be transparent. And authenticity just matters, and it resonates with people. People have a sense about who's telling the truth and who isn't telling the truth. And, you know, if you can inspire people, amen, do that.
That's if good. I came to you, maybe I'm launching a startup company. What's one of the first questions you might ask me? If I come to you for advice, I want to create some publicity around this new startup company. What are some things that you would ask me before?
I'll tell you this about your life. I don't think there's any exceptions, although, you know, people beg to differ. You know, figure out what your worst day was. I don't know, whatever that day was, whatever your worst day was. And you can think about that and conceptualize that in your head. That was actually the best day of your life. That's the day that changed you. Mm-hmm. That's the day that so many things about the person that you grow up to be were established. What'd you learn on that particular day? Because I can take whatever you learned on that day and make something of it. Now, the thing about what I do for a living is, you know, I always tell people, come to me with the greatest stuff. I mean, this is incredible. Yeah. They build these. This is what I say about it. If you build it, nobody's coming. Right. If you build it, people need to know about it. That's mm-hmm. That's where I come in. I make sure that people know about it. If it's right. That great. But, you know, it's and how to get that kind of traction. Why is it that I'm a glorified PR guy? why do I get so much exposure versus the thousand people I'm looking out my window who do exactly, why me? And why has it been that way for 40 years? Intentionality is a superpower. Yep. And one of the things that I definitely have done for 40 years is I show up where the story's already happening, and so do all of my clients. Yep. So, you know, that's kind of a cheap trick to make sure that you're the one who's getting the exposure, no matter what it is that you're selling. It doesn't matter what it is. Right. You know, yeah, I'm going to pontificate about hope, but lo and behold, believe it or not, there's a lot of CEOs out there who have giant budgets. They love being around, you know, the hopeful guy. When I was younger, crisis was my thing. That's what I got paid the most for. And I can tell you, if there is a fire, come into it with me. I promise you, all of us are walking out better off than when we walked in.
Sure.
And it's just a perspective.
Right.
So, you know, if you're a small business or you're cash strapped, it's difficult to get exposure, show up where the stories are already happening. There's a new story every single day. I mean, look, yesterday I showed up on the vaccine story. I got cremated for it, but it's on any given day. I can tell you exactly how many stories there's going to be on people proposing on February 14th. Show up at one of them. You're in. I can tell you how many people are doing New Year's resolutions, you know, on New Year's.
Yeah.
I can tell you, you know, we got Martin Luther King Day on, you know, coming up. I can tell you. Mm-hmm. I mean, some of the news cycles are completely predictable. They happen year after year after year after year. But, you know, so does, you know, the way that we light a match now is so very different. It's yeah. altogether possible. I started a company called Cappening. It was an e-commerce company. And it turned out, you know, I was early in, you know, internet investor. Pretty much everything that I did was a bust, except for one, the Google bought, which was the opposite of a bust.
Yeah.
I started Cappening to show basically it wasn't good enough to get a lot of exposure about whatever your e-commerce offering was. You had to have a product. You had to make money. That's business. You got to make money. And Tappening to me, not only was it incredibly successful until Coke sued me into oblivion, and don't mess with Coke, they will beat you. what was interesting to me was Good Morning America calls us and tells us, you guys are going to be the Echo product of the year. So, oh my God, I'm the Echo product of the year on Good Morning America. Does it get any better than that? And there was this kid, his name was Josh Speer. I'm sure he's very successful now. And he wanted to interview me for his blog. And I'm saying like, yeah, you know, I got Good Morning America today. I'm not doing Josh Speer's blog. I ended up doing Josh Speer's blog. Josh Speer's blog, God knows how much money I made off of that interview. In a million years, I wouldn't have seen that one coming. Good Morning America, nobody even mentioned to me. So, you know, that's the thing about media today. Yes, you know, when you talk about a New York Times or a Chicago Tribune or, you know, Good Morning America, you know, all the places that, you know, people, I don't know, older than 20 know. Yeah, of course they matter. And they're great credibility, but don't not do the blog that you never heard of, because that's literally how, you know, viral is not nearly as predictable as, you know, the Kardashians want to make it look.
Yeah, wasn't it Jordan Peterson that he really blew up after like answering questions on Quora?
Yeah.
Yes.
That's where like 12 Rules for Life came.
Yeah, so listen, you already had them. I am fully expecting from this interview today,
Absolutely.
That I'm going to be on the cover of Rolling Stone next week.
No so doubt.
This better be viral.
Yeah. Oh, no doubt. It's practically
small
a lot.
Small seeds. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So that's some good stuff. I mean, there's a lot of little takeaways. I've got a page full of stuff here.
Sean and I both, by the way, we're both big believers in hope. If you see the t-shirt I'm wearing right here.
41 years of hope right
this
there.
This is 41 years.
Oh! So
we're both University of Georgia. 40 years of hope right there.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know what? The Empire State Building did so cool. That's it. I have.
Yeah, we saw that. Red. It was red.
You saw that?
Yep.
Yeah.
That was awesome.
They started off the night and, you know, and the family that owns the Empire State Building, I'm very good friends with. Oh, you got it. I love this idea. They started off the night with both colors.
Yep.
And basically, after the game, the Empire State Building changed to the color of the winning team, which made them, the Empire State Building, a relevant story. They showed up where the story already was.
Absolutely.
But like you guys, you started off with that baseball stripe story about me. That was me showing up where the press already was. Mm-hmm. I knew that sport, labor disputes in sports, I knew how they were covered.
Yeah.
The owners, players, everybody's rich. Nobody cared about the fans. I showed up in that. Not only did I show up in that story, but I made a difference in that story. And, you know, as history would record it, because Uberoff said it, he was the commissioner at the time, we ended the baseball strike. I ended that baseball strike in 85. And I, honestly, I don't know that I actually ended it, but Uberoff said it, so I must have. But I did that to demonstrate our ability to get exposure. I knew where the story was happening tomorrow. Mm-hmm. We were getting, you know, we were in Time magazine before they ever went out on strike. Also, in my 20s, that story made my agency, you know, what it became. And I was, who was I? I was the guy in front of the microphones speaking on behalf of all the fans who had hundreds of thousands of people protesting and boycotting stadiums. Just because we invented a National Citizens Action Group to protest and talk about walking down the middle. Because, hey, our positioning was, it's you want to strike, if that's your right, you can do whatever you want. But when you come back to strike, we're going to strike. Mm-hmm. So consider how long you stay out, owners, players.
Right.
It was a one-day strike.
That's good. That's yeah.
But that was the beginning for me of showing up where the press was already happening.
Yep.
I mean, there's only a few ways to get, you know, as an unknown. You got to be extremely creative, which is hard and subjective. And, you know, I've certainly done some creative things in my career. But showing up where the story was already happening, that's a cheap trick. I do it for every client I have.
Absolutely.
It's good stuff. Well, Eric, why don't you tell us about what you're up to now? I know you got a book coming out.
Mm-hmm. The Audacity of Silver Linings.
Whatever else you want to share, too.
The Audacity of Silver Linings, you know, it was kind of born by, talk about a viral mistake. I had COVID, you know, 2 years ago when, you know, it was just in the beginning. I'm getting hundreds of phone calls. Nobody knows anybody with COVID. I have COVID. I was on oxygen for 89 days. And I wrote on a piece of card. I couldn't even talk. I wrote on a piece of cardboard, held it up for my bed. I don't even remember what the words were, but my life just changed like that. And, you know, suddenly I realized, you know, what was important, like breathing. And the photo itself went viral. I ended up on the cover of all sorts of magazines. My story became international. It wasn't just, you know, in the U.S. And that was one time in my life where I unintentionally showed up where a story was happening already. I didn't know it was going to be. I didn't do that one on purpose. Mm-hmm. And actually, for a guy who very carefully crafts his public persona, that, being the sick guy in bed was not, you know, what I was really going for in life.
Right.
But what I learned from all of that and from all of my interaction was just how valuable hope was.
Sure.
And that it wasn't a client of mine. It was just something I could do to give back. I made people feel, you know, hopeful. I kind of taught through my own illness, you know, how do you enjoy the space between, you know, where we are and wherever we're going. And, you know, it kind of turned out that everything that people were worried about that was going to be gone tomorrow, it already was. It was gone. That was it. And, you know, people who needed help in general, and this goes to, you know, mental well-being and mental illness in this country now, people who need help, they look a lot like people who don't need help. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I thought it was, you know, leadership's, you know, job to share calm, not chaos. So, you know, basically I had the opportunity to talk about a surprising, you know, new cards that I was dealt, and they weren't the ones that I was expecting. And the message was, I'm going to play the hell out of them anyway.
Sure.
Everybody can do that. And it was a message that resonated, and it's the subject matter of my next book.
And when is that supposed to be out?
I'll be out in 11 months, in January. published by Random House.
Very cool. I love that quote. People who need help look a lot like people who don't need help. I think that's a great.
That is a great quote.
That's a great quote. Mm.
Yeah, thank you.
Very cool. Well, Jonathan,
I mean, you have look for everybody. If there's any takeaway from this, it no matter what you feel like's going on in your life, no matter what the circumstances are, whether you think they're grim, whether you think we're coming out of this, whatever it is, you know, if you're feeling like there's no way, now would be a seriously good time to make one, because you can. That's possible.
Absolutely. And one random question for you before you go, Eric. So we're both, I'm a direct response copywriter. And so one of the first exposures I had to PR was a very direct response brand of PR, which was Paul Hartounian. I was wondering if you,
which was what?
Paul Hartounian. Did you ever hear of him back in the day? Yeah. Sold the Brooklyn Bridge was his PR stunt.
Yep.
Yeah. That's one of the first names.
You know, to me, when I was younger, we were very involved in infomercials. And I don't remember if that's how I met Bob Bly, who we chatted about earlier. I don't think it was, but we launched the Juice Man. I don't know if you remember. It was a Trillium Health Products. It was just a startup that became
Jack LaLanne.
Well, I represented Jack. I had Jack the last 5 years of his career, but I did find Tybell, Billy. I found I was the one who picked Billy Blanks for Tybell.
Wow.
I did find, because of my, in my youth, and Matthew Lesko, by the way, is a great example of direct response. Mm-hmm. The value of the discipline of direct response was you could measure it. And that's the thing about what I do. How do you measure it? Like, okay, I'm in a paper. Right. What did that cost and what did I make? How do you measure that one? And I've always tried to draw from my the earlier part of my career and all the lessons that I learned in direct response for what I do in PR. So the type of exposure that anybody should want to get is the type of exposure that will impact. If I impact one person from this interview is so worth it to me, so worth it.
Yeah.
If I get a phone call, great. All of the lessons in direct responses, you know, what resonates with people, what, you know, breaks through all the clutter, all the hype, all the misinformation, and draws that person, and, you know, part of it's empathy, what the ability to look at lens through the person that you're talking to. Can you do that? Can you draw them into your story? You know, great direct response, you know, writers, that's what they're, you know, that's what they do. Mm-hmm. That's why their copy makes, you know, sells more, whatever it is that, you know, you're selling.
Yep, absolutely.
I mean, when Matthew Lesko, you know, and Matthew's a dear friend of mine still.
I've interviewed him before. He's very entertaining.
Well, Matthew, when I met Matthew, it's government information.
Yeah.
I mean, talk about boring. That guy takes government information and makes it fascinating. There's a story, Larry King, it was in his first book.
Yeah.
It's about me and Matthew. And this was when I said to Matthew, I did his first three books all while I was in college. Information USA was the first $20 trade paperback in the history of the New York Times to make a bestseller list. Back then, $20 books did not sell in volume. And everybody in the publishing house was telling me why what I was doing wasn't going to work. By the way, they still say that to me. I don't mean publishing house. I mean everybody. Whatever I'm going to do is impossible. I love impossible. No such a thing. But I said, hey, Matthew, why don't you not take your next book to – every time you go on TV, the bookstores, they sell out. Why don't we just sell direct response? This is his fourth book. And, you know, two New York Times bestsellers. The second book was a flop, which I also handled. And we did. We self-published. We would go on Larry King, and we would go on Letterman. And I would make a fortune doing nothing from direct sales. To me, I thought, wow, this is an epiphany. This is a much better, you know, gig for a living. How do I do that in perpetuity? And Larry King tells a story. It's his first book about when me and Matthew were there. We're the backup guest to like Sinatra or something like that. Somebody famous canceled. Matthew's in D.C. They call it Matthew. You know, yeah, we're coming. Larry King was like, I mean, on radio, he had a midnight to 3 a.m. show. If you got on his show, you got a bestseller. So, yeah, in a heartbeat, we're there. So we go. It was midnight when I used to stay up that late. You know, we're in this green room, and it's pretty fancy, you know, for radio in those days. That was it. That was like, that was a Rolls Royce Cadillac of radio. And Larry King walks in. He's a chain smoker at the time. Doesn't even look at us. Doesn't even say hello in the quote unquote green room. That's not really green, by the way, everybody. And I'm like, wow, what a nice guy. So Matthew says to me, would you mind coming and sitting out there while I do this show? I'm saying like, yeah, sure. That'll be fun. I'd love to. So I go out, and Larry King is his hands. And he describes this literally this way. And it's very accurate in his book. He's got some guy in government information. He's bored out of his brains before he asked the first question. He wanted Sinatra, not Matthew Lesko that night. So, he said, Larry King, and he's chain smoking, you know, going through the shtick that he does when he introduces the show at midnight. And he says, my guest today, Matthew Lesko, and, you know, says two sentences out of the boilerplate. And he asks a question, and Matthew does the Matthew act. Just goes, you know, he's all animated. He did this 3.5 minutes until the first commercial.
Yeah.
Larry King goes, his face is like this. He looks up. I'm watching him. He literally takes his hand out of his face. His eyes just light up. And Matthew doesn't take a breath. And it's fascinating. Get a house for a dollar and, you know, all of Matthew, everything that Matthew talks about. And we go to the commercial break. And, you know, they go to the break. Tamara, I can't remember her last name, was his producer at the time, and Larry King, he's just lit up with energy. He looks at Matthew, he says, I'm going to make you a star. And we must have done Larry King's show, I don't know, 35 times at least, including when he went on television.
Great story.
And the direct response, that was Matthew. Matthew got people interested.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a great story.
Yeah.
It just shows the show. You show up knowing what you're up to. Knowing what you're up to and show up with certainty about what you're up to, it goes a long, long way.
That's why they play the game.
I mean, to this day, you say Matthew Lesko, and I still picture his commercials with the question mark jacket. His
Riddler suit.
Yeah, his Riddler suit on. And I'll never forget that. You know, there's some things that you forget over time, but you never forget that.
I joke with Matthew about it. I mean, it's now a Halloween costume.
Yeah.
I mean, if you have gotten to some place in your life where they're making Halloween costumes out of how you dress, I think you did pretty good.
Absolutely.
That's pretty good. That's my new goal right there.
There you go.
Get a Halloween costume.
Stand out.
Yeah.
Eric, thanks so much. We've enjoyed it. Thank you for spending some time with us today. And I want to mention your website. How can people find out more? Listeners find out more about you? Where can they visit?
Yeah, ericopr.com. You can also go to my personal website, which is actually my literary agent. It has all sorts of information about me. That's ericyaberbaum.com. Mm-hmm. And since nobody will ever be able to spell Yaberbaum, Google PR for Dummies. That one's memorable. So you can get the correct spelling of my name, and then you can find me anywhere you want.
Yep. It's funny. I've had your book on my shelf for... it's over 10 years. It's probably been 12, 15 years and didn't put a connection. Didn't realize, hey, this is the Eric right here. We're having on
that's
the show.
Me.
So awesome.
That's why I wrote it.
That's right.
Actually, PR for Dummies, I did twice.
Yeah.
And ironically, in spite of its title, that was the hardest book I ever did both times. That is all my philosophies, all in that book.
Yeah.
Good stuff. So go over to, PR for Dummies, go over to Amazon, grab that thing. There's all the secrets right there.
Keep on buying and send my mom some nice emails, please.
There you go. Thanks.
Thank you, guys. Yep, have a good weekend.
You too. Bye-bye. Good stuff. It's always interesting. There's so takeaways. My brain's kind of turning as we're talking to him, getting attention. Some of the things that we obviously know about, but using, you know, talking about things that are so appropriate holidays coming up, you know, we got Martin Luther King, you know, you got the.
Yeah. That the idea of, you know, we've talked about this around this, but I mean, he put it very succinctly, show up where news is already happening.
Absolutely.
You know, and you can forecast a lot of that because there's dates on the calendar. Mm-hmm. Or you can just, you know, stay in kind of in touch on your favorite social media feed.
Yep.
under trending topics and jump in.
Yep.
So
exactly.
Good reminder, you know, fundamentals.
Did you see the GMA interview with Stetson?
I did.
That went viral.
For those that don't know, Stetson Bennett, winning quarterback. It's got a great story. It's like a Rudy story.
Absolutely.
And he shows up on Good Morning America, hungover at least, maybe completely drunk. We don't know. But yeah, and you could tell, like, he looked like, you could tell Michael Strahan knew immediately because he's been in that place, right? I mean, he knows. So
it's funny. I mean, no cancellation. Rolled right with it, right?
Yeah.
Well, to all of our listeners, thanks again for watching. You can find us over at persuasionbythepint.com. You can find us on all of your podcast platforms, media channels, Stitcher Radio, iHeart, Spotify, you name it. Sean, it's been fun. This is our first episode of the new year. I think it's our second.
Yeah.
Hard to keep up.
Yeah.
Many of you know we didn't do a beverage today. Sean just finished up his fast this past week.
And, refeeding, got a green smoothie today. So. Yeah,
you can't go back right into the
You got to do
calories. You got to ease into it, right?
Yeah, absolutely. So yeah, we got a 6-day schedule that we have to follow and ramp up and introduce food. So yeah, it's mostly fruits and vegetables right now.
So next week we'll be back on our food.
Yep.
But to all of our listeners, thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time.
See ya.